What's going on, guys? You're listening to Blue July.
And this is season 3 of the Beast One podcast by Chris Ortiz.
Crazy, I think I'm going crazy. Crazy, I think I'm going crazy. Crazy, I think I'm going crazy. Crazy, I think I'm going crazy.
Welcome, everyone, to the Beast One podcast. This is your host, the coach, Chris Ortiz. And today we have Jeremy Mahan. Now, Jeremy is head coach over at the Ward Training Center, one of Houston's premier mixed martial arts gyms. Now, Jeremy is sort of a renaissance man. This is a gentleman that looks at analytics. This is a gentleman that served a little time in the military. He's a father. He's a husband. And all of this has culminated into one of the best coaches in the Houston MMA scene. Now, slowly but surely, Ward Training Center is raising a legion of fighters, and they're on the rise, and their winning percentage is quite high. So if you would, I'd like it if you sat with us, listen to us, and see if we could glean a couple of pearls of wisdom off of our man, Jeremy Mahan, from the Ward Training Systems. Y'all take care, have a blessed day, and go out and be that someone. Welcome, everyone. We'd like to give a special shout out to our sponsors, starting off with the Molina team, serving the Spring and Woodlands area for all your real estate needs, both residential and commercial. You can contact Manuel at themolinateam.com or 281-507-6923. You can also find him at the Molina team on Facebook. The Woodlands Yoga Studio, offering 77 classes a week and 21 different types of yoga, including heated and non-heated classes. So there is truly something for everyone, helping you find flexibility, strength, and peace of mind. You can contact Brandy at 936-271-1485. The website, thewoodlandsyogastudio.com, and then on Facebook and IG, The Woodlands Yoga Studio. And last but not least, Space City Collective. You can buy, sell, and trade vintage designer shoes, clothing, and other collectibles. Christian and Giovanni Guzman see shoes as a form of art, culture, and a way of life. Come check them out at their storefront, or you can find the website spacecitycollectiveshop.com and on Facebook and Instagram at space_city_collective. Thank you, gentlemen. Thank you, ladies, for sponsoring the show. And y'all go out and be that someone. Hey, welcome, everyone, to the Beast Simo podcast. It's the coach, Chris Ortiz. And today, we're going to sit here with Ward Training Center's general, the head gorilla, Jeremy Mahan. How you doing?
I'm doing great. How you doing this morning?
Doing good, man. I've been here for about 20 minutes, and we've already had some of the most interesting conversation already, so I'm excited to see where this goes. But I'm going to start it off early like this. Like, talk to me about your military service. That's the first thing that jumps off at me.
So I joined the Marines out of high school. I was like a year out of high school. I went into the Marines, and the Marine Corps will either change you or it'll make you. It's going to do one or the other. You know, you're not coming in there the same as you, or you're not leaving the same way you came in. And so, I think the Marines was something for me that definitely, like, turned me into, you know, who I am today, if that makes any sense. Like, I was only in the Marines for 4 years. I didn't re-enlist. I didn't, you know, do any of that. But I got everything out of the Marines that could be gotten out of, that I needed to get out of it, you know, for myself and those. In those 4 years, I was in infantry, and you know, I was one of the very first U.S. troops to go when we went to Iraq, and so just being there and being in combat as a Marine, and then coming back to the civilian world and getting into fighting, like it's definitely helped me out a whole lot on the path that I chose, you know, here in the civilian world.
So, how does seeing combat change a man?
Man, you know, I don't think it's the same for everybody. Everyone kind of changes different from it. But like I said, it's one thing, like, you all change. You know, you see some, I would even say, man, like at different times, it affects you differently. You know, like fresh out of combat, you know, you see the world and you see situations one way, and then, you know, years later, you know, you may see things a different way. The way you process certain things that you've seen or done, or, you know, just experiences you've had, those things can change, you know, through the years. I think now kind of the stage I'm at in my life, it's something that I've come to terms and to come to peace with. And, you know, it's actually made me a more peaceful, like, human now, because I've just seen the most raw, like, messed up sides of what we can, you know, what we can do to each other. And, you know, I don't want anyone else to really have to experience that. I know that's not possible. You know, we're going to have war, we're going to have those things, but, you know, be the change, you know, if any little part I can do to help people want to be a little bit more peaceful, you know. I know that comes across crazy because we're on a fight podcast. We're talking about we're talking about brutality, but you know, that's just another way we can channel those things that are just human nature. Is we can do it in there. So
yeah, well, I've found oftentimes that fighters are some of the most peaceful people that I've met. You know, they save the animosity, or they save the brutality, you know, for the mats. They push that energy in that direction, and you know, off the mats, some of the most relaxed, calm, kindest people that I've ever met. So it was mixed martial arts and the martial arts. Was it just like a natural transition after the military, or did you have experience prior to the military?
No, I think it was a pretty natural transition. In the military is where I very first started any kind of training. I was around when the Marines first started their MCMAT program, which is like their martial arts, program there. And I also started training a little bit of jiu-jitsu when I was in the Marines. My squad leader, he still owns a gym in California, and he was a fighter at the time. His name's Adam Lin. He's like one of my mentors.
Yeah.
And, Adam snatched me up on a deployment where he went just to Japan. It was before the war, and just made me his training partner out there for 6 months. I wouldn't say I fell in love with it, but I definitely, you know, got some experience with it. And did a couple boxing matches, and then got into kickboxing shortly after, you know, coming back home. I got into competing in kickboxing by that point. And at the time, there was no amateur MMA fighting here in Texas. You went pro, so you just kind of went from, like, amateur boxing, amateur kickboxing, whatever, into pro fighting at that time, you know, other than a couple smokers and that type of thing. You know, I can say definitely though, when I first got into it, I was a fighter.
Yeah.
And you know, it was just kind of hitting on. Through time, I evolved into a martial artist, and that's when my views and my, you know, I started kind of just changing the way I saw everything in life, because I started seeing it more like through the lens of like a martial artist, which is just different than a fighter, you know.
Oh yeah.
And fighters can be martial artists, you know, and martial artists can be fighters, but they're definitely there's differences, you know.
I've heard GSP allude to that, you know, like I'm a martial artist, you know, rather than a fighter, or he leans more in that direction. What do you think the difference is?
If I had to just say one difference, it's just discipline would be the word.
Yeah.
And I think that'd be discipline in all aspects, you know, right? Not just the martial arts, because, you know, as someone who likes a fighter, and I'm not even talking about, like, say, a boxer or MMA, I'm talking about someone who just likes to fight. You know, I kind of grew up liking to fight. And as a fighter, someone will just punch you in the face, you know, like, that's almost a lack of discipline, right? And I don't have to have discipline in other aspects of my life to do that. Whereas, you know, when you're a martial artist, you kind of embrace this whole, like, life of discipline. And, you know, I think that really translates to make you a much better fighter.
What was the hook? Because you said that someone snatched you up, Lin.
Yeah.
Right? And he started training with you, and you're like, I don't know if I enjoyed it that much at the beginning. But what was that hook?
Man, I wouldn't say I'm, like, ridiculously competitive, but I am, you know, highly competitive. And a lot of it was, like, I didn't like the fact that people I thought I was better than could do to me what they were doing to me. You know, it's such a humbling experience to have someone, I'm like, man, physically, like, there's no way this, how's this person doing this to me? And I'm tired, and I'm about to puke, and all this, and this, you know, this person that's not, like, half of what I am is just totally dominating me, and I didn't like that. So I'd say there was, you know, there was that. And then I had always thought I could fight, you know, because like I said, I grew up, like, fighting. I liked it, but then once you realize that you're not really as good at something as you may have thought you were, it put me on a path to just like, man, I gotta get good at this.
Ain't it wild how many people are walking around thinking, you know, they're a little bit better than what they are?
Yeah.
And I'm guilty as charged too.
No, man, you know, I'm sure I am. I mean, I guess, kind of, it's every man, I guess, and not just men, but everyone thinks maybe they can do some things that they can't really do. That's why one of the things I would encourage is like, hey, if even for once in your life, just because you want to do it, this is the kind of place I'd allow it. Come in here, sign a waiver, like, you know, if you want to just get down with someone in the cage or on the mats, you know, no one here is going to hurt you, you know, but just so you could, just so some, you can feel, man, how really helpless you are. And, you know, as a, again, just as a human, I want to be able to defend myself. I want to be able to take care of myself and just to say, well, I can, no, you can't. It's something you have to practice and you have to get good at, and you have to, you know, it's learned. It's not something that's just natural.
Yeah. You can have some natural physical attributes, right? But there's a skill portion, and, man, skill.
Mm-hmm.
Skill is nuts. What kind of kid were you in school? Because I'm a teacher, and I'm always curious with my guests, like, what kind of student were you? Athlete, you know, this, that, and the other. Tell me a little bit about you, the student.
Man, I was kind of a bad kid. You know, I wasn't bad in the sense of, like, I'm out there, like, stealing and, you know, like, doing those things. But, you know, definitely ran with the crowd that was, you know, selling drugs, doing drugs. You know, I was always, like, heavily influenced. You know, I grew up in Houston, like...
What part?
Northwest, Antoine, all been to Antoine. So, everything from, like, Little York to 43rd to 290, Piedmont.
Where'd you go to school?
Scarborough. All
right.
Yeah,
Hispanic population.
So, right? so that was kind of the thing, man. I went to middle school at two schools. I started off at Clifton, and then I transferred to Hoffman when I was in eighth grade. Hoffman's over in Aldine,
mm-hmm.
and this zone to Eisenhower afterwards. And so we had moved over there to Inwood. And, you know, spending that year at that school and then going back to, you know, back to Scarborough, that definitely influenced the gang-type mentality that I had at that time. You know, my parents were divorced. My dad was working out of the state kind of thing, so I didn't see him a whole lot, you know?
Yeah.
And so I was just a time, like, where I needed some influence, and the influence I got was, like, Tupac and, you know, just really seeing the wrong kind of, you know, Houston was very, like, gang-affiliated at that time. So I just kind of got in the mix of some of that. And, you know, then going to high school, I would say what saved me was sports. I grew up playing sports. I was always an athlete. I played in middle school, but you really just have a football season. You know, I would do cross country, I would do track, I even made the basketball team, even though I didn't like it. But for me, like, sports was always the only way I was going to pass classes. And it wasn't because I was dumb, it was just because I...
Motivation.
I'd rather just goof off, you know. By the time I got to high school, I'd rather just not go to class. Like, you know, if I goofing off gets me in trouble, I'd rather just not go at all and get in the same amount of trouble, you know. So sports really saved me in school. It's the only thing that kept me, you know, passing grades. And so, you know, pretty much the only way I was able to graduate on time and move on was through sports. In high school, man, I played everything. I played, you know, baseball, football, soccer, golf.
And golf at Scarborough.
Yeah, golf. We weren't a great golf team, but we got out of school to go golfing.
Yep, all day.
And so that was cool. And then my senior year was the first year that HISD had a wrestling team. And so that's how I first got introduced to wrestling. My football coach, you know, he knew I wanted to, you know, to...
That's 99, 2000, isn't
it? Yeah, 98.
Okay.
98. My football coach was like, hey, you need to go do this, you know, get you stronger. And, man, I thought it was, like, pro wrestling because I was into watching that.
Oh, hell. You
know? And I'm like, you know, but no one knew what the hell it was, really. And we had a coach. we didn't know how fortunate we were. His name was Coach Carlson, and he was from Iowa. He wrestled he wrestled for college in Iowa. And so we had this awesome wrestling coach. We were all horrible. I wrestled the whole year. I don't think I scored a single point. I know I didn't win a single match. But now, I can wrestle my ass off. I've been wrestling since 98. So when these, when these good high schoolers, even college kids, are like, talking about their state championship, like, bro, I've been wrestling for 25 years now. Yeah. I'm still going to school you. And even though I never won a match in high school, I've been doing it forever.
That's nuts. I remember when wrestling came to Texas, my brother was part of the first wave, and those private school kids, they had been wrestling for a minute.
St. Thomas, man. So that was like a pretty humbling thing too. It was like this, we were like we all went over there to St. Thomas, like this very preppy, private, school, and like, man, them white kids whooped our ass, man. They did us dirty too. Like we got beat so bad by these private schools. I think even like Strake Jesuit had a, so there were these little private schools and they just smashed us.
Yeah.
But they've been doing it since they were, since they were younger already too. So we had no chance. And especially now knowing how grappling is, you're going against a guy who's been doing it for 4 or 5 years. It's literally like week two for you. You're going to get smashed.
No, man. And there's something special too about wrestlers, their mentality, their work ethic. It's a wonderful sport. I'm a little bit sad that it wasn't around earlier, mm-hmm. Because it benefits young people in so many different capacities. But it's kind of funny to look back that you were part of that that first wave that came through. Now let's move on. Let's talk about your school. I'm over here at this beautiful spot, the War Training Center. Ginormous, got a cage, mat space. How did you, take this love for combat and combat sports and then, have it morph into, this first-class training facility that's putting out killers left and right?
So whenever I went pro, it was way back in 2006. And my first pro fight was with Daniel Pineda. That's how me and Pitt first met, was in a cage in Corpus Christi for IFC. We're on the undercard for this international fight championship. Back then there was only a couple cards a year in the state, so it was a big deal, for us to fight out there. We debuted, and he beat me first round. Classic, what turned into a classic Pit finish with the, take the back, beat you up a little bit, and rear naked choke. And stylistically at that time, I was predominantly just a kickboxer. I had some grappling experience, but nothing like Pit, who had already wrestled through high school. He was a good wrestler at Waller High School, which, man, Waller's through the years, that's a fight town. They put out good wrestlers, good fighters. A lot of them, come from that area. Since Pitt has come from there. So we fought, and then I was already living on this side of town, kind of where I'm at now. And I was training in a gym that was moving from the Woodlands even further out to Conroe, and just having a baby. My wife was like, hey, there's nothing closer to here. So I looked like, no, there wasn't really anything closer to here, so I might as well open up my own thing. So I opened a 4-ounce fight club back in 2007 and had that for, for a long time, and then brought on a partner, and then eventually, sold my half to my partner. And that was when I opened up War, which was back in 2017.
Yeah.
And so I just, War was just a different direction of things. And it really took a lot of the things and, the mentality I had from the Marines. And then, we're talking about wrestling and the way they are. A lot of it's very similar. So that's when I brought in a wrestling coach. I brought in Mike Moore, mm-hmm. Mindset Mike. He already had a wrestling club that was looking for a home. He kind of merged in with our group there and started running a wrestling program for us. And like I said, the similarities with the Marines and wrestling were perfect. Just the mentality and just the, it's not a lazy sport, it's attack. It's a take ground. You're always moving forward. You're always offensive. You're not defensive. You're counter offensive. It's everything about it was kind of the way, the Marine Corps was ran. And that was the direction I wanted to take our fight team. The disciplines that go involved with both of them, that was just kind of the direction I was wanting to move in. Maybe 2018, I believe. So like a year after opening, had the opportunity to bring on Adam Copley to coach it with me. Adam and I had worked together a little bit with one of our mutual fighters, actually two mutual fighters, and they both won fights when we had cornered them and coached them together. Adam was also coaching at 4 Ounce. After I left, he kind of moved into that role there, coaching some stuff. And, you know, this was just a little better for him, location-wise and whatnot. He ended up coming over here, you know, with us, and we hit it off real well as a coaching team. I think we complement each other in a lot of different ways. You know, a huge one is I'm not big on drilling and those that type of training. You know, it's that mundane, monotonous training. I can't stand it. Adam loves it, and it's important. It's this big aspect of the thing that I was always missing. You know, I'm the live coach. I'm the one that, like, we're doing these live goals, and I put together all these, you know, ways that we're going to work these live type scenarios out. And so I lacked the drilling, you know. Adam's system maybe lacked more of the live, you know, enough live stuff. And so coming together, we were able to put together, you know, a system, and we kind of have our days of the week mapped out, and we've been on the same schedule now for the last about 3 years, kind of how we run classes each day of the week and how it does. And we put all of our work down into the system, and the system is really starting to pay off now, and you're starting to see the fruits of our system. And so just because of that, the gym is able to continue to grow. We moved from a small facility to an even smaller facility while we waited on this big facility to open up. Then we got in here. We've been in here 2 years, and now we're expanding it again to put another room on, because our practices have gotten too big. So I think this place, man, it's just it's an accumulation of just years and years and years of us just hard work and putting the next piece and the next piece, and eventually all those pieces start coming together, and that's kind of what you're seeing.
Well, it's like a perfect storm. Like, one of the things that jumped out to me immediately was the location. Like, this place, this Cypress Tomball area, it's blowing up, right?
Yeah.
So there's got to be people, you know, left and right wanting to peek their head in here and see, you know,
and,
what
and
more
so is we get a lot of people, you know, from the neighborhoods and whatnot, but it's still a lot of our, you know, if you're talking about our clientele, yes, it's from here, and there's tons of it, because there's a lot of young adults out here who want to, you know, get into training still.
They need direction.
And but even like a lot of them come and their parents come to sign them up. Well, their parents are my age. You know, I'm 43. Their parents might be, you know, around the same age group. So we get them involved in some of the classes, and that's been big to me, as being like a family gym. You know, I have a family, and I love my family here, and my brother's here with his family, and we have a lot of families, and that's kind of the atmosphere I want. At the same time, we got to have this killer fight team. But the clientele of that is, you know, it's families from the area. Our fighters, we have people that travel from all over Houston that are training here, and then a few that are even coming in for camps. They're traveling from, like, San Antonio. We've had them from College Station. And so our location here, we're very accessible off the freeway. And so that it's kind of out there, but it's easy to get to. You know, we're not hard to get to, no matter where you're coming from. So that's been a benefit to us too, where, you know, we're not hard to get to. We may take an hour, but it's going to be an easy drive. And
how does one balance that? You made a comment about, you know, being a family gym, but also having, you know, a bunch of killers around, and y'all's results speak for themselves. But that seems like it's a difficult juxtaposition to try to juggle. How does one do that?
Man, again, I think everything just comes into your mentality, and you know, I'm trying to develop this warrior culture here, and historically, like, warriors are family people.
Yep.
You know, we're, you know, good people, family people, and that's what makes you a warrior. You have something worth fighting for, and something that you know, something you believe in and care for, and you know, I just think it's so important. Like, you know, I'm not. Sitting talking about, like, the pussification of America and all this crap. Like, I'm not a big, I don't really buy into a whole lot of that, because I see it on a daily basis, man. There's no pussies in here.
Yeah.
You know, it's just up to us to keep that tradition alive and keep bringing more people into the fold and teaching them, you know, teaching them the martial arts, teaching them, you know, just kind of how to carry themselves inside and out of here. And especially for a lot of these young adults, you know, having fighters here that can lead by example and trying to be good examples. And I think all of our fighters here kind of embrace that role and like it too, you know, realizing that, man, I gotta, you know, I gotta either, you know, stay straight or straighten up or whatever, you know, because now, like, I'm just being looked at in a different light. So it's helping us all out, man. You know, it's like, all my fighters with kids and stuff, like, all the dads are active in their kids' lives, and, like, you know, they see that through me with my kids and other coaches with their kids. And so they're like, well, you know, as they're having kids, they're seeing the right examples to follow, and they're doing the same thing. And, you know, it's just kind of trickle down effect that goes from that. So I really love being part of that, and I don't think that it's too hard to do. So you talk about the balance of it. Like, yeah. I think it's actually kind of an easy balance because the two really go together. You just got to make that bridge.
Yeah. And speaking of that, like, along the same lines, how has being a father and how has that, like, influenced your coaching? How has that, I don't want to say changed, but how has it helped your coaching? I'm a coach at the junior high level, and I think being a father has opened, like, a new window, a new perspective into how young people need to be treated and how you can access them and their motivations.
Yeah. Patience has been something that, you know, like, I think my kids and my fighters have both kind of helped me in that realm. You know, my kids have helped me be more patient. My fighters have helped me be more patient in situations with my kids.
How many kids? Because I know you have a daughter.
Two daughters.
All right.
One's 15, one just turned 11. But, you know, like, what ends up happening up here is a lot of these fighters, you know, they become kind of your kids. And I didn't used to see that because I was still younger. I was still actively fighting. But now a lot of my, you know, 18, 19-year-old fighters, you know, that are getting into it, their parents are my age. You know, a couple of them's parents a little bit younger than me even.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you just kind of start to see my role change. But I know how to be a dad.
Yeah.
So I'm like, okay, well, this is kind of be an easy transition. Then I can just start, you know, treating them, you know, this way, and this is how they want to be treated. And it's kind of makes it easier. You know, I think I have a really good relationship with a lot of our younger fighters, say the 19 to 25-year-olds, you know. I think I have a pretty good relationship with them because I can be more of the father type role where, I'm not saying that they're like, I'm the father role because there's lack of a father around. I'm just saying, you know, we can kind of operate in that type of way, whereas the fighters that are, you know, 29 to 35 or whatever, if anything, they're more like a little brother kind of thing to me. Little brother, little sister, and less of a, like, this is my kid. So.
Well, it's an interesting point that you bring up about the young fighters because, you know, as kids get a little bit older, studies have shown that, like, their parents are not their primary source of, that's not who they look to. As they get a little bit older, they start looking, you know, at other people, you know, for guidance, right? Yeah. And to have someone that's, you know, a good guy that's on their butt that expects the best out of them, you know, that's like every parent's dream to have their kids looking at that versus like what you and me grew up. You know, I grew up over there off Antoine. I lived on Box Hill at Northcliff Manor. So you talk about Inwood, a lot of my schoolmates are out of Inwood. And a lot of us didn't have the strongest father figures to look up to. So as a parent myself, I think it's very refreshing, you know, for young people to have someone like yourself, you know, to look up to. So, you know, definitely, you know, I would pat myself on the back for that, man, because that's, the world needs more of that.
Yeah.
The world needs plenty more of that. Something that I've noticed too, like checking out your social media, you like to drop, you know, little nuggets of wisdom out there on the world, man. What's that all that about, man? Especially the last one, sit at a table, and I'm going to fuck the quote up, but sit at a table where people are talking about, say, hopes and dreams versus talking shit about other people.
Yeah.
Like, I like that because the norm is for people to talk shit about each other nowadays.
I'm all about, like, positivity and just, you know, trying to be happy and making your... I believe if you're doing the right things and making yourself happy, you're going to make others happy. Like, yeah, you know, positivity, law of attraction, things is... Good will just keep coming to you, you know? If you're just being a good person, you know? And I try not to get, like, religious with that because I feel like... The two don't even have to be. They don't even have to be related. Just being a good person, man, is gonna help. So, I got sick about 2 years ago. Actually, I got sick 2 years ago, almost to the day of now. It was like a week ago, 2 years ago. It was never really diagnosed 100% what was wrong with me. The VA ended up saying it was that I have some kind of autoimmune thing and Crohn's, which. I just don't have all the symptoms of that, so I don't think that's it. But long story short, man, in a 2-month time frame, I lost 40 pounds. So I was down below my fighting weight. I started off at like 170, and then I got down to like 130 something. I got to a point where I couldn't walk anymore. My body, the autoimmune thing started, like, I started getting infections. And
you have Lyme or something?
Dude, they tested for all kinds of things, and like, none of this was coming up that I had. You know, they just couldn't figure out what it was. So I ended up being in the hospital for like 5 days. They almost had to amputate my foot because of an infection. I developed something else that they call Ritter's, where like my joints were swelling up and in so much pain and inflammation, I couldn't like close my hands or my feet. It was extremely painful. And then, you know, like I just made up my mind that like I was gonna get through this. And I never once thought like that I wasn't gonna live. And you know, reflecting back on it, man, I was really close to death. You know, like something with my blood and my iron counts and things, I was anemic, and they were going to start doing transfusions, and things were just going really south for me, and they couldn't figure out what it was. And, you know, I just stayed positive, and I started getting better. And when I came out of it, I just decided, man, I was going to live my life with only good days. One of my Marines was down here on my 40th birthday, and that was the gift he gave me for my birthday. He's like, I got you this badass gift, bro. I'm like, all right. You know, he's like, no, there's nothing you're going to open up. He's like, good day. He's like, that's my gift to you. You're only going to have good days from now on. And, you know, from that point, man, when I after getting sick, I just kind of took that to like, Tark said, man, that's right. Just only good days. It's a mindset. It's the way you see things, you know. There's gonna be good in everything, good in every day. So ever since then, man, I've just, you know, made some other personal changes in life, just the way I'm gonna, you know, conduct myself and what my goals are and my, you know, what my legacy will be. And
what have you unpacked? Like, what are some things that you left by the wayside that you decided, like, man, you know what, life's better when I can do without this? Because now I'm peeping game off you.
Man, definitely one of them is just holding grudges. And, you know, just, like, having hatred and things towards others, you know, like, I just...
That's heavy.
I've learned forgiveness, because I learned things, you know, in the long run, a lot of things just don't matter. And, you know, so just, you know, just kind of moving on. Like, if you're worrying about things that happened in the past, then you're not focusing on what needs to happen right now. And it's kind of the same if you're worrying too much about the future, you're not focused on right now. Like, right now is the only thing that's real. The future is in our head and the past is in our head. They're not real. And so the only thing real is like right now what we're doing. Even when you listen back to this, it's in the past. It's not real right now. So just kind of like changing the way I viewed it all, you know, that was like the biggest thing to leave behind is just the way you view life and appreciate life.
So just being in the moment more so.
Being in the moment, man, with your, you know, with your family, you know, with your friends, just with every, you know, with every moment, you know, just being more in the moment. It's definitely got me, you know, every morning I try to make some kind of inspirational Facebook post, you know, with only good days. And then for the most part, I kind of try to stay off it, you know, now for the rest of the day. You know, I just try to have one time that I make a post or something and just kind of, you know, because I used to have been browsing through that. Instead, now I'm out here, I listen to what my kids have to say.
Yeah.
Or, you know, just a real conversation, or do something real, go to the gym, work out, ride a bike, go
be alive, you
know,
man.
Just go out and you know, that's been something else I've been trying to do is get back to just appreciating things and doing things that I liked doing as a kid. I think a lot of things we just stop doing them. They don't stop being fun to us. We just stop doing it. So, you know, I purchased a 29-inch BMX bike. And I started riding BMX bikes again, and you know, getting with some of my old friends. I mean, we just go, we go cruising the bayou and stuff at the city on our BMXs, and you know, climbing trees. Man, I used to like climbing trees. I climbed a tree just, you know, a few weeks ago. Man, it was still fun as hell. So just
getting down's a motherfucker now, though.
Yeah, you know, it's a little more scary nowadays. And I didn't make the jump. I've had a couple knee surgeries, and probably about to have another one. So, you know. Wasn't trying to jump down, but just doing some of the things that I've always enjoyed. You know, it's like, man, because one day you won't be able to do it. Just yesterday here in the morning, on Tuesday mornings, we do like a 10-round Tuesday. And we do, like yesterday, so it was 10 rounds of boxing and then 10 rounds of jiu-jitsu. And one of my oldest, you know, training partners, friends, you know, Nate Garza showed up. He's another 40-year-old.
Nate in his gray sweatpants.
You know, so yeah, Nate in his sweatpants showed up. And, you know, I mean, we got some boxing rounds in together yesterday and some grappling in. And, you know, then we also, you know, did it with the younger kids, the active, you know, fighters. And I'm sore as hell today, but just enjoy the hell out of it because I know one day I won't be able to do that. And I'm going to look back like, damn, I wish I'd have done that some more because I love doing it. So just to, you know, still be able to do the things I'm doing. Yeah, my body hurts and it's real beat up, but like I can still physically do it right now. So I'm going to do it. You know, I'm gonna live good days and appreciate for what I got.
Yeah, 43 is a little different. I'm 43 myself. And yeah. I even feel the difference from like 43 to 35. Mm-hmm. Getting old is a little different. What's been one of the biggest eye-opening things about aging gracefully? Because I want to age gracefully myself.
Man, I think, you know, one thing I tell these guys in here is, like, I think my physical prime was probably 35 to 37, you know, maybe even 39-ish, but kind of on the back, you know, it was already on the...
Yeah.
I think 35 to 37, it was really at the peak. And then 40, you know, 40, I had my last MMA fight at 40. And I lost my lightweight title down in Belize to a 24-year-old.
Kid.
But we went 5-5s, and it was a scrap, you know. And I got beat on pretty good. You know, I ended up with a broken rib and foot broken and concussion. And it was kind of the war I wanted to go out on, you know, get to go out on my shield kind of thing. But I knew at that point I could... That was the one during that camp, really, I could feel my body was starting to, like, it couldn't handle the hard training that I like to do. I like to really push myself, like, to outwork everyone. You know, I want to be just a machine in there and not get tired, you know, cardio conditioning wise. And I wasn't able to put the miles in quite the same way I used to. And I could feel, you know, things slipping. And now at 43, I definitely feel... The speed isn't quite what it used to be. A lot of that's footwork issues because of knee problems.
Yeah.
But even my hands, you know, I still, now I have to beat these kids with experience, you know.
That's a tool.
You know, I'm not beating them because I'm out fasting them anymore. You know, I'm not faster to the punch now. It's just a little bit more experience. But where it's a trip is, aside from having some knee problems, I don't feel like I've hit my grappling prime yet. Like, I feel I'm still getting better daily in grappling. I'm still grappling, you know. I'm on the mats at least 3-4 times a week right now. You know, and I get to grapple with everything. You know, I'll go with anything from white belts, you know, up to my black belts. And, you know, including the active fighters that are you know, good, you know, grapplers. And I still feel I'm getting better there, man. So... You know,
you got on the mat with Robo and Trent, and you were successful, correct?
Yeah, so last year, that was kind of one of the things of being sick, you know, was within a year of being sick and getting better, that was kind of my motivation as a fighter. Like, it's always, like, easier to get yourself back into shape or something if you got, like, that goal in front of you.
Yeah.
And, you know, I had the opportunity to grapple against Chad Robo for this lightweight belt for Submission Hunter. And it was going to be a little bit less than a year to the day from when I went into the hospital. And so I was like, man, like, this is my motivation right here. And so, you know, we had, I think, about 4 months that we knew about it. So, I, you know, got in real good shape for that. Won that match. And a few months later... Had the opportunity to grapple Mike Trinh for the combat sports coverage,
yes.
Their lightweight belt, and you know, was able to win that match too. And I mean, both those guys
are highly decorated.
I mean, both of them Bellator veterans, both of them are IBJJF world champions as black belts. They're both really good.
And doing good shit in life right now too. On top of all that,
Chad is kind of has been kind of a mentor to me and someone who's helped me out for years and years. And I've known Chad, and he's helped me through some really dark times, dealing with some of the mental issues of leaving combat, you know, some of the spiritual mental issues that can come from that. And, you know, I credit Chad and his Mighty Oaks program to getting me started to the path of enlightenment, kind of, you know, to where I am today on that. So huge respect, you know, to Chad as a friend, as everything. And Mike Trend, man, Mike and I, you know, I definitely wouldn't have said we were friends. And I don't mean that in a disrespectful way.
Yeah.
I just mean, like, we didn't really know each other. We've been around the same, kind of like you and I, we've been around these same circles for a long time, just didn't really know each other. Trained at even some of the same gyms, but we're just never at the same time. But I've known about him and followed him on social media for years. Huge respect to Mike Trinn and what he does, not just for the fight community, but for the Houston community. You know, Mike, man, Mike does a whole lot. He's helped out with a lot of fighters in their careers without asking for, not only for not asking, like, thanks back, but he didn't even want people to know he was helping them.
Yeah.
You know, Mike is he's a good guy, and his seafood's excellent too. So, you know, like, man, that was just cool getting to go against both those guys. And, you know, I mean, I think they have, you know, mutual respect with me too. So, you know, being able to go against guys like that, I mean, yeah, you want to win, and winning is everything. But at the same time, like, man, if you're going to lose a match too, like, that's the kind you want to go out against. So those are fun.
Oh, most definitely. Chad was my first jiu-jitsu instructor, you know, and I got a lot more respect for him even now, seeing all the good that he's doing, you know, for the mental health mm-hmm. of our wounded warriors, you know, and like, really proud to see some of the stuff he's doing. He even went back overseas to rescue some folks and bring them back to the States.
Yeah, man,
with Tim Kennedy.
He's like a real-life superhero. You know, they made action figures of them doing that. Like, Chad...
Really?
Chad is like a legit superhero action figure kind of American, so...
Yeah.
I couldn't say I personally know anybody, like, you know, more
American hero than Chad. That's some movie stuff right there, isn't
it? Yeah, I'm sure there will be, and, you know, and Chad... he's actually, you know, kind of someone I'm able to look at his life and see, you know, some similarities here. Like, you have chapters in your life, and Chad's book isn't nearly done yet, you know. And I would be very, we've never had this conversation, so I'm not putting it out there to him, but I'd be very surprised if we don't see Chad in political office here pretty shortly, you know, because he definitely, his heart's in the right place. Yeah. He's a smart dude. He's very well connected. He's got the credentials, and, you know, Chad's someone I would get behind for you know, whatever side he was on with it, man. I would know that he did the right thing there. So,
yeah, good dude. This is something too, and this is totally in another direction. But you were talking about analytics and in MMA, and I found that to be so flippant interesting because we're talking about it took baseball like 100 years to get to that point to where like the A's and Billy Beane started to use that to impact, and it's changed the game. And you can even see it like in the NBA now, where it's a league that at first, you know, size and playing inside the paint, you know, was most coveted, and now we've gone away from that because the three is so much more powerful than the two. How are you bringing that into mixed martial arts? Because that may be the next wave of growth, and for you to focus on it so early, I think it's genius.
So what kind of we noticed was going on was that, you know, when a lot of us coaches and fighters that are now coaches and just coaches have been around a while, when we started out with the MMA, it was mainly just sparring. Yeah, you'd still do your jiu-jitsu or your body, but a lot of the MMA-specific training was just sparring. And I think the reason was nothing was developed. There wasn't drills to do. There wasn't these things in place. So through the years of gathering, you know, the last 15 years or so of gathering all these different drills and training techniques, we're able to implement a program here or anywhere, you know, where these guys aren't having to learn all the things we did along the way. They're able to fast forward 15 years of our knowledge and like, okay, I'm not giving you, you're not going to do all this dumb crap we did that didn't work.
Yeah.
We're just going to give you the things that work. We're going to teach you the moves that work. We're going to teach you the way to do things to where they work. So that's kind of what got it started thinking about it. And then, like I said, I've grown up around baseball, all sports, but really baseball. And baseball, I'd say, is the big one for, like, you know, we sit and laugh when we're watching games because they got stats for everything. This guy in the month of July, you know, when he hasn't shaved for three or more days wearing the same socks, he's batting this when hitting left-handed pitchers, and, you know, and you're like, wow, that's a crazy. But they've been around for hundreds, you know, not hundreds, but, you know, over 100 years. is a profession. And so they've got the data on these things. And over time, and you see this in MMA too, with people at the higher levels, everyone's good. Everyone's athletic. So it's going to be the smallest of details that put you above your opponent. It's going to be the little things that you're doing that they're maybe not doing yet. You know, so having data is a way to see what you're not doing well or what you are doing well that maybe you could do more of.
Yeah.
So, you know, that kind of takes us to where we're at, right? We got cell phones and things where we can keep logs and stuff. So for the last several years, Adam has been logging in all of our wins, all of our losses. When they are wins, how he won, submission, decision, you know, KO, TKO, when their loss is the same way, what organizations we've won with, which, you know, we keep all those. So now you're able to look at it and have our average not only yearly, but now for the last, say, 3 years, you know, of what our winning percentage is. Of our losses, are they losses at the amateur level? Because if so, we really have some work to do there in the development. No, actually, we're 97% wins in the amateur level. Okay, where are our losses at? They're coming at the higher level pro, the UFC, Bellator. Okay, that's where most of our losses are at. So how are we losing in those? Okay, we're losing most of those by TKO. Well, how are we getting caught in those? We can go back on those films and we can start seeing, okay, so man, really, if we can just clean up this little area right here, we can probably knock off three of them losses would have never happened if we could just clear that up. Now that percentage bumps up too. Now the over, you know, so we can start looking at numbers on things the same way a baseball team looks at it. Well, when you start doing that, it kind of brings you the same way, you know, I was mentioned to you about like the Astros. It really starts your developmental with your farm leagues. So now we're developing, you know, our smoker class fighters, and then we have our amateur fighters, and we have our local regional pro fighters, and we have our higher level pro fighters. So you start breaking up like that. It's like double A, triple A. Yeah. It's all the different systems that you have in baseball. So we're just really looking at it like it's a big sport, right? NFL has their ways they run things. You know, basketball has ways they run things. So we try to run our practice much more like one of these sports teams has, because they've already put research into it. They've got rid of things that don't work. They're doing the things that work. So look at a team, for instance, that wins the Super Bowl. They're trying to have the best offensive coordinator, the best defensive coordinator. They want the best overall head coach to put the pieces together. You have to have, you know, you kind of want the best of all these areas. Okay, well, we need to be doing that. Well, as we're doing those things, we start attracting many more athletes to our system because they're familiar with the way these practices run. They can understand this. They've been being told how to do these things this way their whole life in practice, so they can easily assimilate into our program. One of our heavyweights, Miles Banks, he comes over from basketball. I've dealt with a few football players before, but him being our first like basketball player, it's just as easy. He's easily assimilated in because the way we've structured our practice, because the way we run things, it's like they've done these other team sports. Another one of our fighters that we had in the past, Keith Ford, you know, he's a running back for the Buffalo Bills. He went back, he's playing in the XFL right now. He was easily able to come in and start training with us because, man, we're going to run this just like, you know, y'all run this like football practice. Yeah, it's something you're used to. It's not just like saying, all right, everyone get in here, we're sparring, and then, you know, the coaches are gone or they're just watching. You know, like we're running things differently. We're starting with the big group warm-up, and then we're breaking off into our kind of our specialty teams. We're working our drills, and then we're all coming back together. We're working this live, and then we're breaking back. And that's the way you're running these big things. We're doing it the same way.
Yeah, it sounds exactly like a basketball practice. Yep. We're going to let our guards work over here, forwards over there. We're going to work on some ball handling over here, rebounding over there. Man.
Yeah.
What is one of the biggest takeaways that you've seen since that transition? Because this got me super interested. We'll just say, like, from you as a school, like, what is one of the biggest areas of growth
Let's say the biggest of growth I've seen from a competition thing is consistency. We are consistently winning in everything. We're winning on the grappling scene, and we're not a grappling gym. You know, so most of these grappling gyms still look at us like, man, they're just a bunch of meatheads, wrestlers, their jiu-jitsu sucks. Like, whatever, we're beating you. We're going out to tournaments. Our people are beating you. We're going into super fights. We're beating you. You know, our wrestlers, you know, every year I'm super proud of what our high school wrestling program does, because we produce, you know, not just like district and state champions, but we're producing champions that are out there like winning on a national level in these. And then what's best is we're putting these kids into college, and they're going to school on scholarships from, you know, from stuff they got here. So we're seeing consistency winning there, consistency winning in our grappling program, consistency winning in our MMA program. It's like we're consistently winning, and it's that's all a credit to the system and our approach to how we're doing it. You know what I mean? So I think that's the biggest thing I can see. So then when you start seeing that, it's encouraging. Like, well, I just need to keep up more of the same. And you start again, you start looking at stats, and you just find ways to tweak it. Where is it best? How can we make that better? Because it's never perfect, but how are we really elevating these other areas too? And
I like the Astros comparison too, with the homegrown talent. You were telling me how the Astros are kind of like a model. It ain't about bringing in the big-time free agents. It's about taking what you have, growing it, and then having sustained excellence. Just like the Astros, 6 years, you know, just kicking ass. You know, took a second, right? We had to build from the bottom, but golly, it doesn't matter. Like, you lose Correa, insert, you know, World Series MVP, right? Verlander's gone. Now we got a young Verlander.
And the fight game is a lot like that, because you're going to lose these fighters. They're going to either get traded, or they're going to go somewhere, right, or they're going to retire out. It's kind of, you know, it's kind of the same thing.
Man, well, we're getting towards the end. I know that you got to get out there and coach. Any last-minute shout-outs or, you know, any advice to the young folks out there?
No real advice, you know, other than just stay positive, you know, try to have good days, man. We all can do it, and whatever that means for you, you know, it's going to be different for everyone. But you know, if you're I don't know how many people will listen to this that aren't into, you know, fighting, martial art kind of stuff yet, you know, already. But man, if you're not, I encourage you, you know, get out there to a gym, find you a good place. Like, it'll change your life.
Yes.
In a positive way. No one's ever regretted learning martial arts. No one's ever regretted learning how to fight and defend themselves. It's never happened. So, you know, get out there and just kind of live life.
All right. Well, I appreciate you carving out a little bit of time. You know, you far exceeded the expectations. I didn't know who I was going to meet. I knew I was going to meet, you know, a good gentleman, because my coach, you know, loves y'all guys over here. But golly, man, you're a cool dude, man. Yeah, like, no, I could kick it with you for a minute, man.
I appreciate that, man. No,
and then
thank
to
you.
Find out that we were basically neighbors, you know, living like 7-8 minutes away. 249 was the dividing line.
Yeah, that's crazy, man.
Both our wives are English teachers.
Smallest of worlds, dude. It really is. Yeah. The older you get, that's something else you see with your wisdom. You're like, damn, man, it's a small ass world.
Yeah, but appreciate it. I wish you and the gym continued success. And thank y'all guys for listening to the Be Someone podcast. Y'all take care, have a blessed day, and go out and be that someone.
What's going on, guys? You're listening to Blue July,
and this is season 3 of the Be Someone podcast by Chris Ortiz.
Crazy, I think I'm going crazy. Crazy, I think I'm going crazy. Crazy, I think I'm going crazy.